Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation. You know, I could give you the newspaper roundup. Turn it off when you're ready with the Rudolph. Chuck it, the Chuck Berry. Listen, I know your minds are not on politics. I know that. I know your minds are on what it should be, which is family, travel, friends. I get it. But if you survey the newspapers of America, what you don't see is what you hear on talk radio and what you read on the internet, which is the truth. What you see in the newspapers is what the government or the media itself, which is sort of a government unto itself, wants you to hear. The greatest fraud in American history has been uncovered, which is the fact that there is such a thing as called man-made global warming. It turns out that there was a conspiracy that was being conducted and still is being conducted by criminals with doctoral degrees, gangsters in the academic fields who were making millions and millions of dollars on grants to continue pushing the global warming myth. This myth has been brutally exposed. Their emails have been found where they're talking about covering up the real data. Let me give you an example. Let's say you never went to college or you don't understand statistics. These fraud artists in the universities who have been pushing the man-made global warming lie are sending out graphs that are based somewhat on the so-called hockey stick picture. Now, what's a hockey stick graph? It shows a slight, look at the bottom of a hockey stick. It goes up at a slight angle on the bottom of the stick, right? And then suddenly there's a steep jump and rise up the handle of the stick. These gangsters in fake science, climate science, have been using the hockey stick picture to show a jump in man-made global warming, when in fact the actual rise in temperature over the last 100 years has been about 0.5 degrees centigrade, not 1.5 to 2 degrees centigrade. You say that's not a lot, and it's enormously different, number one. Now, the reason they're able to get away with the hockey stick graph is because all of their computer programs were rigged to produce hockey stick graphs. In other words, no matter what they were presenting, it would be presented in a form of a hockey stick picture. That would be like rigging a pinball machine, rigging a card game, rigging a racetrack game, or a race at a racetrack. So these scientists should be not only laughed at, they should be fired and arrested, and their money should be taken back from them. You're not reading about this in the Washington Post or the New York Times, these old lie newspapers that are filled with nothing but the government media complex rubbish. You're not reading any of the stories that are really out there amongst the really thinking people. Final nail in coffin of man-made global warming is a big story. But as I said, you're not interested. You're not interested in the other stories, such as illegal aliens have killed a free hospital in Texas. They were coming across like leeches for a clinic at Grady Memorial where they got free dialysis. Now my heart goes out to sick people. Who do you want to pay for the dialysis that the illegals from Mexico were coming in to get you? You want to pay for it? You want to pay for the free dialysis? Because you are, Schmendrick. You're the one who's been paying for the illegal aliens. And by the way, watching Mexican television, they said they became like a family in the clinic. They loved it. They had a good time. They weren't working, you see. They were getting free dialysis. The hospital got leached out so bad they went out of business. You don't want to hear about that either because you didn't read it in the local paper. 20 young Americans recruited to join group with Al-Qaeda ties. Many of the recruits had come to America as young refugees, fleeing a brutal civil war, settling in an enclave of Minneapolis. These are Somalis, by the way. The same wonderful people that we warned you, some of whom would never use toothpaste or toilet paper, and that they would never adapt to our society. Now, 20 of them have been recruited to join Al-Qaeda. We warned you what would happen, but you didn't listen to us. Navy SEALs face assault charges for capturing the most wanted terrorist. Did you hear this? Now they're going to attack the Navy SEALs. The world is upside down. The world is completely upside down. We have a Navy that won't fire a gun. We have a chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff who never gives his commanders the right to fire a weapon. But they will fire the Navy SEALs to do their job. So this is the Savage Nation. You're not reading any of this. You won't read that the Obama approval rating has dropped to a new low of minus 15. What do I mean by minus 15? And who made up that number? We came up with this cockamamie number that Obama's approval has dropped to a new low after his genuflection tour to Asia, where he got on his hands and knees from China to Japan and back again. Bowing and scraping like a servant in Japan and China. He's an embarrassment not only to himself, but to the United States of America. Who made up this report? Rasmussen. Suddenly, I guess he's a member of the right-wing conspiracy. Not enough for you? How about this one? Chinese-owned General Motors, it could happen. Shocking concept for the ultimate all-American company. But it may happen that General Motors will be given to China by your friends at Wall Street and in the Treasury Department. Geithner, another one. That's the story. Goodbye jobs, hello mom and dad, say young adults. New story. Many young adults are turning to an old standby to weather the recession, moving back with mom and dad. So although they go out to clubs at night and they have the gelled hair and they look cool, they're really going back to the same room that they were in before they went to college. Instead of looking for a job and making their mother and father's life a little easier, they're busy getting stoned in a nightclub at night, looking for sex. You hear this? So maybe I should ask that question, since it's family week on the Savage Nation. Might be more fun than all the news. You can puke from the news. You can get sick from it. You get crazy from it. You can actually get ill if you look at the news, like I have to do every day. So I'll focus on goodbye jobs, hello mom and dad, say young adults. We're talking about kids that went to college, I don't know what they majored in, probably SOS 101 or poli-sci. Whenever you hear SOS or poli-sci, you know that they're going to be barristers. It's a new word for a coffee. And look, when I go into a coffee place and there's a young person, you think I sneer at them? I don't. But please, don't ask them their opinion on world affairs. Do me a favor. Don't ask their opinion on anything, for that matter. They're still in diapers. They may look like a man, but they're still in diaper. They're still in diapers. How old were you when you had your first kid? 24, 25, 26? I had two kids before I was 30. I was working three jobs. Okay, I didn't ask for a handout from the government. I didn't go to Aunt Sam and say, give me a check so I could go out at night with gelled hair. I also wanted a new Porsche with a bib on it in 1982. But you know what? I said that's not that important to look like a moron driving around with a Porsche with a bib on it. Nothing against a Porsche nor a bib. My children needed a bib, not a Porsche. I had my priorities right. Now, one in seven parents with grown children say they had a boomerang kid move back home in the last year, according to a study released by the Pew Research Center. So if the liberal Pew Research Center says it's one in seven of a grown kid coming back home to be a goon in the bed again, a grown goon who probably doesn't get up in the morning, I guarantee you they stay in bed till 11 waiting for the mother to bring them a cup of coffee. Oh, what a rough night, yeah. Well, but this is typical in Italy anyway. I mean, there's nothing unusual about it when you think about it. Many parents like having a grown-up and a child there. They love it. It's sort of a Munchausen by proxy thing. You know, like, you heard about Munchausen by proxy, didn't you? The mother, it's usually the mother, who creates symptoms in a child. They want the child to be sick. They actually make the child sick in order to have a sick child around. That's a Munchausen by proxy. Now, I don't know what name I could give adult children, 18 to 29, who no longer live alone, but they've gone home to mom and dad. I don't know what you'd call it. I wouldn't call it Munchausen by proxy. I'd call it deadbeat by proxy. Maybe the parents turned them into a person who can't make a living. But that's the sign of the times. You got a kid at home like this? You want to talk about it? You want to talk about the fake global warming? And Al Gore should be running in hiding right now. He should actually be running out of America right now. Now that Al Gore has been found out to be the biggest fraud artist in over hundreds of years, he makes the alleged five mafia families of New York of yesteryear look like paupers compared to what he's gotten away with, this guy, in my opinion. The man is a complete and total faker. You remember the one of the polar bears on the ice floating? A staged event. There's as much ice on the earth today overall as there was 50 years ago. But your child, your delicate young lotus blossom child, who you raised as a vegan, who doesn't eat anything with a face on it, believes in global warming, believes Obama is the Messiah, believes this, believes that, starves herself to death with vegan diets she doesn't understand, deficient in various vitamins, her brain chemistry is off day and night, doesn't know a thing, but she's convinced she knows about global warming, she knows about war and peace, and she even knows about love and marriage. Even though she has no love and marriage, even though she has no peace in her heart, even though she knows nothing about global politics, she's been brainwashed by the liberal establishment in believing she knows all of these things. This afternoon, before the show hours ago, I went down to an outdoor mall that I go to every day on a bicycle, generally. I like to look at people. So it's a snapshot of middle-class life. I wouldn't say it's the mean streets of America. I don't need to go look there to know what's going on. I go with the mall. I like to look at the children and the mothers and the old guys and whatever. It's a snapshot of a segment of society. And you see various things. So today the turkey is there, the big turkey, and the kids love it. They still love the same thing as they love a Santa Claus. They love a turkey just as I did as a child. In the middle of it all, I'm standing there in the sun on my bike, and I see a group of handicapped children. Pardon me if I'm using a politically inappropriate phrase. The children were severely handicapped, and there were some saintly people taking care of them, and I watched them, and I watched them, and I watched them, and I looked at them. I had many different mixed feelings about the handicapped children. One boy in particular broke my heart. He was a good-looking boy, probably had muscular dystrophy. The man's face, he couldn't control it, and he had a little, the tongue was moving inappropriately, and he had to touch a thing on the wheelchair. And I said to myself, why does God do this to people? Because I know inside that boy's head there's a full person, a person who has the same wants and desires as a healthy boy playing football. And I said, look at this child. And you start to ask questions that for which there's no answer. And then your mind shuts down. And then I looked at the people who were caring for them. And I went up to two of them just quietly. And I said, what organization you're with? Well, they happen to be with the County Department of Education. And these people are saints. This is where they integrate children who are physically handicapped or emotionally disturbed in one way or another into a regular school. And, you know, in my day, they would have been locked up in an institution, as my brother was, where he died after 20 years of misery. Or they would have been left at home with the parents being ashamed of them. So you have to say, in a way, thank God that they are integrated into the school system, on one hand. On the other hand, let me stick to that for a minute, the compassion side. On that hand, on that side of the equation, I watched them, and I looked at these saintly people who take care of them, and I talked to them in a normal manner. I mean, they're saints. The teachers who take care of children like this are saints. And God knows if there's a heaven, they're going to be at the top of the heap there. I'll tell you, they deserve it. And I listened to one of them say to one of the girls, who was a very pretty girl, looked normal physically, but she was apparently emotionally screwed up in some way because she was afraid to buy coffee, something about money, and don't worry, honey, you don't have to pay this. And I didn't know what to say. I went up to one of the teachers, and I said, is there any way I could buy coffee for everybody here? And he said, oh, no, thank you. It's very kind. I didn't know what to do. I wanted to take everything in my pocket out, the few $100 out, and give it to him. I didn't know who to, but they can't accept the money. I don't know how to help the really needy in our society. It seems that the really greedy know how to collect money, and the really needy you can't give it to. The really greedy, oh, they have the organizations. The really greedy with the gorillas, they have the organization. And you ask them where the money went, they don't answer you. But the really needy, I can't find a way to give them a dime. You understand what I'm saying to you? Anyway, I'll be back.
Savage.
Savage.
outside is frightful, but the fire
terrible.
Is...
Turn it off. Terrible version. That's a bad download. Please. At least spend the money and buy a DVD of it, for God's sakes. Forget the commission. Play Bing Crosby for a minute, if you got it ready. If not, I don't really care. What do I care with this stuff? God, and...
Jingle bells.
Turn it off. No, it's no good. You know what, guys? Take it out of my sight. Go out tomorrow to a record store where you can buy some DVDs. The downloads, I hear they're free, but they're horrible. What was the electromagnetic pulse? Anywho, here we are. So, boomerang kids. Kids who don't have to come home for Christmas. Well, they do. They walk from their bedroom into the dining room. 1 in 7 parents with grown children say they had a boomerang kid move back home in the past year. Boomerang kid. College grad no longer finds a job in an apartment. No one looks to get married. They don't buy a Wendy Wang dress, whatever her name is. No more Manalo shoes. Instead, they're back what they left behind before college. It's sad in a way. I don't know how kids 18 to 29, kids. It sounds like, you know, I once saw a movie, a Fellini movie, back in the 70s, I think, when he still made great movies, of an Italian man living at home. He must have been 50. The mother was 75. 73, 75, and he had a hairnet on before he went to sleep, and he was like a, you know, like a, one of these guys, like a Lothario in his mind, but the guy was 50, still living at home with his mother in Italy. He'd wear a hairnet in the house to keep his hair in place. He was a straight guy, and I got a kick out of it. You know, she was with the nightgown, he was walking around with the bathroom and the pajamas, and it was a way of life. That's why in Italy, the birth rate is like minus 1.2. Something along those lines. If a guy is going to be out all night, and if sex today is easy for a guy to get, what's he getting married for? The girls have been, you know, they've been taught to just be Jezebels, that's all. They picked it up from you-know-who. And they're acting like, and they wonder why can he get married? What's he going to marry her for? He only wanted sex.
Savage.
So the reason newspapers are going broke, they say, is because the ad revenue was down. Well, maybe that's true. That's one of the reasons. But why is ad revenue down? Well, less people are reading papers. Why are less people reading papers? For one, convenience, the convenience of the internet. But for two, because the newspapers don't give them what they want. They don't get what they want in a newspaper. Every newspaper headline is against the family, against the military, against the police, against the church, against God, country, and home, against families with children. Now, why would anyone want to buy such a thing? Now, that alone unto itself wouldn't be so bad, but on top of it all, the newspapers are filled with outright lies. Lies about everything. Lies about global warming. The final nail in the coffin of man-made global warming has come out. There was a hacker who went into the email chain of the people pushing this big lie and found them lying for years about the global warming data, making it up, covering it up, throwing people off scientific committees who questioned them. They were marginalizing anybody who dared challenge them. They were practicing a form of scientific fascism. It's been all found out. Now, you say, well, everyone knows this who's intelligent now, and it is true. Even the hemorrhoid's been on this, even though he only went to grade school. Even the hemorrhoid can follow the lie. That's okay. But I want to remind you that on the Savage Nation over 2 years ago, I had a scientist on called Harm de Blige, hardly can pronounce it, and he argued against man-made global warming in the most beautiful manner, right on this show about 2 years ago. He's the author of a great book called Why Geography Matters. I was so captivated by his stories. But I want to make another point. This show is usually at least a year, if not more, ahead of its time. If it was 20 years ahead of its time, I wouldn't even be in business. It's good to be slightly ahead of your time, like Panasonic used to say. But if you're too far ahead of your time, you wind up either in a bug house or in a jail. You understand that? So I try to stay just slightly ahead of my times, not too far ahead. A year and a half is about as much as you can take. I told you the evidence was against global warming, that we're going into a global cooling phase. Did I find the data? No, but I know enough about science to read the data. And my conclusion was it's all a fraud being promoted by Al Gore Leone, who I said not so jokingly, was the head of the biggest crime family on earth, the Corleone crime family. Do you understand that there are billions of dollars that have been made in this and are going to be made in this? Trillions of dollars if you let the biggest charade artist get away with it, which is Obama. If he pushes this global warming crap in Copenhagen next month, he is signing your death warrant, the death warrant of America. You understand? So that's why I say you got to understand that the papers are dying because they're not giving you the information that you need to even make an informed decision. I am. I am giving you the information you need to make an informed decision. Remember, this show starts late in the day on the East Coast, early in the evening, really, and late in the day on the West Coast. So people have heard stuff all day long on other radio shows. I'm not going to get up here and read you the headlines from the Drudge Report. You've heard it all before in the morning. The golfer does that. That's all. He comes in and his show is based on three websites in my, and that's the end of it. All right, does a good job. You know, I saw the movie over the weekend with the preacher. I understand the whole, who did with Burt Lancaster with the preacher with the fake, and they burned down Elmer Gantry. I mean, I've seen Elmer Gantry. I realize most people in conservative radio are Elmer Gantry. I realize that they bang the Bible of conservatism, and boy, do they make the noise about God and country and patriotism, and they tell you to send your son to die while they fly high overhead in a Gulfstream. I understand why you have cynicism about many of these Gulfstream conservatives. I understand it. Incidentally, I coined the phrase Gulfstream liberal way back. So the reason I survive is because I'm slightly ahead of my time. And I'm telling you, I gave you the information that you needed. June of what year? Is that 06? June of 06, I played this. Now, you're just hearing it now from the hemorrhoid like he discovered it himself somewhere. The man who never went, and he has a blackboard and a professor. He should get a cap, too, to go with it. Why is it the guys who have no education always want to be a teacher? I don't understand it. Why does he act with a blackboard? I don't understand. All right, he has an audience. He got lucky. It won't last forever. This, too, shall pass. The same way global warming was accepted by the radical left, and the liberals who took it as gospel, it's the same thing with guys like the hemorrhoid. He's accepted for a while as sort of a prophet until you come to realize that it's Elmer Gantry. So anyway, it's time. Mark it down. The way I told you in June of 06, global warming is going to be uncovered for the fraud it is. I'm telling you right now, the phonies in the conservative movement will be uncovered for the phonies they are. You'll see. Mark my words. It'll be Elmer Gantry all over again. Now, let's get down to brass tacks. June of 06, I have a guy on who's a genius, but the man could tell a story as good as any storyteller, better than Mark Twain, but it's all based upon science. And when he got on this show and he talked, actually it was the sound bites we got, and he talked about the little ice age in the 1300s, which I had not known about, because I'm not a climate scientist. I was captivated to understand that the ice age that came down in the 1300s was so severe that priests in Northern Europe walked to the glacier as it was coming down upon their farmlands and asked God to stop the glacier. You hear this? And what does it have to do with you? They have everything upside down. Although carbon dioxide levels have gone up slightly over the decades, the Earth's temperatures have not gone up in the same proportion. In fact, they've gone down. We've come through one of the greatest cooling phases in decades. So yes, there's increased carbon dioxide, but it has nothing to do with increased global warming. Number one, because there's global cooling going on. Number two, how could you buy such a theory to begin with? That if you have even a fifth grade education, let's say you went only to grade school and you could only work for Fox News. So you went to grade school. Even there you learned that carbon dioxide is necessary for plants to grow. Even a reporter on Fox News should have learned that in the fifth grade. Even a genius who copies books from Thomas Paine and calls them his own, even a genius like him should understand that CO2 is actually good because it produces more plant life, meaning more food for you. How could you buy the fact that more carbon dioxide was actually bad for the growth of plants and food? How could you buy into this? Answer, because many of you are vegans and vegetarians. Many of you have grown up without sufficient nutrients to even think properly. Many of you are so starved for the basic food chemicals from a reasonable diet that you are incapable of a rational decision or thought. You understand what I'm saying to you? Many of you have nice daughters in particular. It affects the girls more than the boys. Now there's a thing going around the girls. They write, they have a new thing. If it has a face, I don't eat it. Now, how cute that is. I don't need anything with a face. So they're walking around emaciated, looking like a ghost. Their brains are not functioning, I wouldn't even say not optimally. The girl can't even think. She's missing the critical enzymes for thinking, let alone for living. The girl has a deficiency in B12. The girl has a deficiency in iron. The girl has a deficiency in all the other B vitamins. The girl has a deficiency in various amino acids, which are necessary for proper thought and proper survival. But she's an expert on, you name it, global warming, social justice, minorities and how they're treated, illegal immigrants. You name it, she has the answer, because all this poor child, this wispy young daughter of yours, who you catered to all of these years, has learned is a lie. She knows nothing. The final nail in the coffin of global warming, you got to read the article, the articles that have coming out. You won't believe this. You won't see it in the morning paper. It's a giant conspiracy. I want to play for you now the piece, the short version, Beowulf, of this incredible piece that I played in June of 06 before the man on Fox even understood what the word global meant. Play it.
The debate in the scientific community is completely over now. There is no more debate about the fact that it's real. We're causing it. The consequences are bad, headed toward catastrophic. We need to fix it, and it's not too late.
We're in an ice age. It's been going on for tens of millions of years. Ice ages consist of surges of cold temperature that last a long time, but not surges that keep the planet cold all the time. There are times of moderation in between. And then these peaks, when it suddenly gets almost Cretaceous in its warmth, and for hundreds of thousands of years.
Almost gets Cretaceous in its warmth for hundreds of thousands of years. What a brilliant sentence. Cretaceous in its warmth. I may have an aversion to hot places because the Cretaceous was a dangerous place. I may have some distant ancestral memory of time in the Cretaceous. I think the dinosaurs were around then, weren't they? The proto-liberal was around, the dinosaurs, the pterodactyl. But, you know, you listen to a guy like Gore, he's always been known to a man that was imbalanced. And he said he invented the Internet. I mean, he's an imbalanced man. He looks at, sounds it, and he's a faker. It's Al Gore's theory that he's promoting. And he says the science is over. There's no longer a debate. He's a liar. There is a debate. How can he make such a definitive statement? There is no debate, and we caused it, when there are many scientists who don't agree with that. It's unbelievable to me. So I think I've put to rest at least one thing. Be open-minded. At least say to yourself, you know what? At least I learned from Savage there is debate. And I'll be open-minded about it. You know, keep your mind a little open. Don't become a closed-minded jerk and think that what you're reading about in the newspapers or whatnot, for you hear from Al Gore, is true. Be open-minded. You heard the professor, and we're going through a phase now, and we're treating it. Oh, listen to clip 30. Here's the most frightening one. Here it comes.
On the basis of the statistics, we're due for a precipitous retreat into a cold climate in the cold world, which will be far more challenging to deal with than a warm world. And we should be prepared for great, that's one of the reasons I use climate change. It's one of the great challenges. It would level geopolitical battlefields in ways we have never encountered before, and we are probably on the verge of it.
Did you hear what he just said? It will level the geopolitical playing field, and we're on the verge of it. And we're going into a colder phase. A colder phase, which will be far harder to deal with than warming. That's amazing. So get out your mucklucks. Don't throw away your underwear. And get ready for the ice age. Maybe we can learn something from the Inuits. Well, I really love doing this piece. I really love it. I'll tell you, this is what I guess I'm doing what I really want to do today. I try to do everything I want to do every day anyway. Understanding that there's a lot more to be learned than you may think. Not only about the hypothesis of global warming and climate in general, but about the war, about everything that you hear about. Please be open-minded. Don't walk around didactically and say, this is it and we know. Leave that to me. Only I can do that.
All right. So a hacker breaks into the computers at the University of East Anglia's Climate Research Unit. He releases 61 megabytes of confidential files onto the Internet, which every intelligent person on the world has now seen. And when you read the files, you realize that the entire global warming story has been made up from the beginning by a group of scientists who are making a fortune off it. This is one of the greatest scandals in modern history. Those of us who are intelligent enough to see fraud when we state it's fraud when we see it are saying it's the final nail in the coffin of anthropogenic global warming. But I want to reiterate that I played that sound piece for you in June of 06. Think about it. June of 06, over 3 years ago, long before the rad conservs were talking about this, I was instructing you about it. And I will take credit for popularizing this fraud. You're going to also find out, if you go onto michaelsavage.com, where I downloaded the latest article on this, that the scientists, who, by the way, should be arrested, all of their assets seized until the monies are paid back, were actually writing communications to each other on how best to squeeze dissenting scientists out of the peer review process and how to create a scientific climate in which anyone who disagreed with them was written off as a crank whose views do not have a scrap of authority. You actually see them plotting to do this, blocking them from scientific journals, throwing them off editorial boards. And the reason I'm excited by this is because I have long been an outsider, both when I was a scientist doing ethnobotanical research, which was laughed at in the beginning by the scientific establishment. Then when I was doing research and popular writing in the world of science and herbs, I was laughed at and ridiculed. I did earn a PhD from the University of California at Berkeley, of which I'm very proud. It was a very high first-class degree, and I killed myself for it. And by the way, I had two babies at the time. Didn't stop me from having two jobs and getting a PhD, because I wanted it more than anything you could imagine. I wanted it more than anything you could imagine, because I knew the day would come in my future where I would be debating people. I didn't know in what format. And they'd start by saying, well, I have a degree in X. And I would say, well, okay, I have a degree in Y. Now let's go on to the actual facts. I wanted to use the degree as a shield against those who would use their degree to try and throw away my arguments based upon their credentials. So I have the credentials, and I don't need them. All I need are the facts on my side. And that's why I worked so hard for the PhD. It certainly didn't produce 10 cents in my pocket. But as a dissenter all my life, whether it was in science or now in politics, I must tell you, what you see in this man-made global warming myth is exactly the same as what's going on with regard to my having been banned by the British government from entering Britain. They have smeared me. They have taken my statements out of context. They are telling each other that I am a person who should be written off as an evil, bad person, that my views are evil. They have no authority. They have tried to punish me with lies. They have tried to not permit me to even defend myself. And I must tell you that I wrote Banned in Britain to set the record straight. And many thousands of you have received your copies. I hope you get them for the holidays and discuss it. I set the record straight. It's a document to not only liberate myself, but in the long sweep of history, it is very, very important that free speech be prevented from disappearing in Britain by the very same leftist fascists who have tried to promote global warming as a given, not even accepting any alternative discussion. You understand that the first rule of science that I was taught when I entered graduate school was a scientific statement is potentially disprovable. That's how one of my brilliant professors taught me. I'll just say it again and we'll take a break. You don't need to have a high degree to understand this. What separates a scientific statement from an ordinary statement is that a scientific statement can be potentially disproved. Now, that means you can set it up as a hypothesis and do experiments with it. See, an opinion cannot be potentially disproved because everyone can have an opinion. So you say this, and he says that, and he says this, and you say that. That's not a scientific statement. That's only an opinion. A scientific statement where you say water consists of two hydrogen atoms and one oxygen atom is a potentially disprovable statement. You can run experiments to prove or disprove that. So for Al Corleone and the crime family in these universities that have said global warming is scientifically true and it's in the bag and you can't argue with it, is by definition not a scientific statement because they wouldn't even let anyone disprove their statement. I'll be right back.
Savage. Scientists have tried to prove global warming researchers are massaging the figures after stealing sensitive emails from one of the UK's leading climate research centres. The documents were then made available to the public from a Russian server.
According to reports, there's more than 1,000 emails which reflect bits of discussions between various scientists throughout several years. But from what we've, from the information that we've got so far, some of these alleged emails may actually hold the key or actually the clues to prove that the theory of global warming is a huge conspiracy.
Correct. It is a huge conspiracy. They're calling it ClimateGate. And the fact is that all of the fakers in the business should be immediately arrested, put on trial, and when found guilty of fraud, they should be not only imprisoned for whatever is appropriate, but all of the research funds should be paid back. Any of their property should be sold off in order to pay for it. And that includes Al Gorleone. Al Gore has made a fortune off this lie. Now, the reason I'm spending so much time on this is because Obama is about to put the final nail in the coffin of this country's great enterprise. If he is allowed to go to Copenhagen next month and sign off on the global warming nonsense, the cap and trade bills and the EU garbage, we're finished as a nation. It will cripple us forever. Now, as you well know, Obama himself has been either duped or he's absolutely not as smart as he pretends to be. But the fact of the matter is the man has got to be told in no uncertain terms, do not sign the cap and trade, do not go to Copenhagen on behalf of the American people, or we'll throw every Democrat out of office. I don't think it will matter to them.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
By the largest hailstorm on record.
Weather experts yesterday slamming into the
area of New Delhi. It's snowing.
That's a tornado! Yes, a twister in
this Washington. Is just massive.
All right, so you're hearing a trailer from the movie The Day After Tomorrow from a couple of years ago after Al Gore had fomented the greatest hysteria of our time as a climate gonif, a climate crook, a climate gangster, the head of the climate gang that I've never seen anything like this in my life. I knew as a trained scientist that the information was not complete. I knew as a trained scientist that when they were saying the science is complete and everyone agrees that they were lying because it's never true in science to begin with. There's virtually nothing in science where there's 100% agreement. And so when I started to hear from Al Gorleone, the head of the Gorleone Crime Syndicate, in my opinion, that all climate scientists agree that the science is in and anyone who disagrees is the equivalent of a Holocaust denier, I knew that there was something wrong with this picture. I knew it as a trained scientist, and I started in June of 06 to do some research, and I found some very reputable climate scientists, real climate scientists, unlike Al Gorleone, the head of the Gorleone crime family, and the fake climatologists who were in it for the money, who were saying the opposite. They were actually, we were entering a period of global cooling. I knew also basic science proved that increased carbon dioxide levels, in fact, increased the food supply on the Earth, not decrease it. So the more carbon dioxide actually is better, not worse. And then if we went into the opposite phase, which is what we might be going into, which is global cooling, there'd be mass starvation on the Earth. In other words, everything that these crazy people have been promoting with global warming, which they then changed to, they changed it from global warming to what? Something, what they call it, Beowulf? They went from global warming to what? Climate change? Because they knew that they were being found out. Well, now the lid's been blown off. A hacker went into the emails of the hysterics who've been promoting the global warming and found out that they were making up the data, fudging the data, pushing people out who disagreed with them, throwing disagreeing scientists off scientific boards. And I want to reiterate, in June of 06, long before the hemorrhoid had a piece of chalk in his hand, long before any of those wrapping themselves in the Elmer Gantry flag of geniuses on the conservative side, you name it, June of 06, I was trying to sound the alarm bells, telling you the alarmists on global warming were liars. Now, here we are at a point where we have a faker as president, a complete and total charlatan in the White House, who bows and scrapes before dictators around the world, and now has the audacity, in addition to running America like a banana republic, which I called a bandana republic for obvious reasons, because they had the nerve to push this health care bill down our throats on a Saturday night while you were sleeping. That's something that was done in a banana republic, and I called it a bandana republic because it reminded me of gangsters, not legitimate politicians. This same charlatan president is going to go to Copenhagen next month and sign away the life of America unless he is told in no uncertain terms to stop. And I'm telling you that this came just in time by a God save. And I also told you that only God could save America. Once I saw who Obama was, I said, oh, it's in God's hands because the people don't have any power anymore. I said, only God could save this country. And I am telling you as I stand here, this is God's work, that a hacker broke into the emails of these climate hysterics. And the American people don't know about it yet because ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, and the others won't publish it. The Wash Post, the New York Times, the LA Times, and the other failed newspapers will not publish it. And so therefore, conservative talk radio and the internet continues to be the greatest engines of truth in America, which is why we are thriving while they are dying. Now, I want to play for you a little piece right now. We'll start it, maybe break, and come back to it. And I want to remind you again, June of 06, I had this on the show. I'm slightly ahead of my time. Listen, the National Academy of Sciences, so-called, came out and said it's the warmest it's been in 2,000 years, and it's all because of us, mankind, and that the science is in. That's rubbish. Many scientists disagree, and what the other scientists are doing are looking at snapshots, not the whole moving picture. Now, one of the chief scientists that I listen to is a professor and geographer named Harm de Blij, B-L-I-J, who wrote a book called Geography Matters. And he is speaking about global warming and cooling. Please listen to clip 28.
It got even warmer without our help in the Eemian than it is today. Sea level was 15 feet higher at the top of the Eemian than it is today. And it is an uncomfortable truth that if you take a look at those graphs, there's a very good chance we will be facing that again, whether or not we contribute to the pollution of the atmosphere.
Whether or not we contribute to the pollution of the atmosphere. I hope you understand that. And we're just in the middle of a cycle that's getting hotter. Now, so listen to 24.
About 25 million years ago, glaciers begin to form in the highlands, even in the tropics, in New Guinea, in the Andes, Kilimanjaro. About 12 million years ago, the Arctic Ocean freezes over and stayed frozen over. And then, in a period, a time frame called the Pliocene, there is a plunge of temperatures from about 6 to about 1.8 million years ago, when that incredible cooling came close to wiping out humanity, the primates, our common ancestors, but survived in Africa, not in Eurasia. And then 1.8 million years ago, it has been cold like this for 100,000 years. Then the temperature rises precipitously. Well, that's not a very good word. Suddenly, up to warm conditions of the kind we're experiencing today, that warm period tends to last somewhere between 8 and 13,000 years. Then there is an equally precipitous drop, and it is cold again. Now, notice these glaciations that are happening here have their kind of warm intervals as well. But then there's another one of these warm periods, and then it drops again. This has happened now about 18 times over the past 1.8 million years.
Now, I understand many of you can't follow it or don't want to follow it. I also understand many of you are college-educated or reasonably well-educated on your own and can follow it. It's common sense. This is not too complicated. Now, we then go on to Professor de Blige's discourse that I think is fascinating. Listen to 26.
Just 18,000 years ago, and I know this is not news to anyone in this audience, ice stood as far south as the Ohio River. My house in Cape Cod would not have survived. And it came down very quickly, and it receded very quickly. The reason the United States is the breadbasket it is because those glaciers scoured rock in Canada into the finest powder imaginable, shoved it all into our Midwest, and then the ice retreated, leaving us with some of the Earth's most fertile soils. I'm surprised the Canadians haven't demanded reparations. This is where all this fertility came from.
See, he's the kind of science professor that I loved. First of all, he's knowledgeable. Secondly, he can explain it in common terms that we can understand. And he's basing it upon real evidence, which he was showing there. I'm going to leave out the real science behind what he's saying. This is not opinion. You can say it's theory based upon evidence. Let's put it to you that way. But it certainly counters the absurdity of the National Academy of Sciences that the hottest in 400 years, and we did it. Now, go on to 27.
Just when it looked as though Europe was going to get itself organized, that its wealth and its cities were going to become the centers of democratic governments, as already began to happen in Iceland and one or two other northern places, the climatic roof fell in. And in a matter of not generations, but years, Europe was transformed. The agricultural frontier, which was in Scandinavia and included Iceland, there was settlement in Greenland. Greenland wasn't called Greenland for fun. It was called Greenland because it was a green tip of a very cold place. And then all of a sudden, climate switched over. It had to have to do something with the thermohaline circulation in the ocean and North Atlantic Ocean, obviously. But in any case, what happened was, priests prayed with their congregations at the faces of glaciers advancing out of the alpine valleys, gobbling up villages and churches and farms and fields. It was as many a diary I have read, because wine growers were keeping diaries in those days, because they, more than anybody else, were sensitive to climate change. They all wrote and said it was like lava coming out of a volcano. That's how glaciation impacts.
So this was played on the Savage Nation in June of 06. I'm replaying it for a few reasons. One, to show you that the show is usually ahead of its time. Two, to show you that reputable scientists have long argued the opposite of Al Gaglione and the shysters in the climate hysteria movement. And three, don't believe what you read in the newspapers. Believe in what you hear on the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Going through now is another rapid change, and now we're going to a hot phase, and we could see real hot temperatures that are going to change the face of humanity. I don't doubt that we will, but for God's sakes, can we stop being primitives about it? Gore is sort of a priest of a gospel of lies that we did it. This is part of the narcissism of the liberal who thinks that he does everything. It's like a baby who makes doo-doo in his diaper and says doo-doo. Al Gore is saying, in essence, we made the doo-doo and we're suffering as a result of it. Only we could do it. He doesn't understand that we have almost nothing to do with the change, the climactic change that we're going through right now. It's, again, a form of egomania that the liberal, of course, relates to because they live in a world of narcissism and egomania where only they can affect things. Not God, certainly, and not nature. They're better and they're more supreme. Do you understand the psychopathology of the liberal and why I said liberalism is a mental disorder? It's even affecting their view of climate change. Now, I am giving you a lesson that you could get nowhere else. I don't believe that what I'm doing for you in the last 5 minutes could be done at any university in America today, not only because it wouldn't be done, but it couldn't be done. I'm giving you a nugget on global warming in this segment that you have found nowhere else. You won't find it anywhere else. It's worth everything on earth. It's going to enlighten you and give you a power and a strength that you don't you understand that knowledge is power? But we're living through a kind of mass hysteria in the United States of America and in the West in general. A mass hysteria that we're evil, that we're no good. They won't blame the Islamo-fascists for what they're doing. It's our fault. They won't accept the fact that it may not be our fault that we're going through a hot spell or a warm spell. Again, it's our fault. The evils of the West. Don't you see how it all ties in to the mass hysteria of the illiberal left? Don't you see that this is an emotional reaction that ties into the psychopathology of the liberal or the leftist? Now let's go on to 29. This is the most important segment of all.
We are now contributing to a worsening of the global warming that nature probably had in store for us anyway. And as you know, really the only question is the degree of anthropogenic warming that we're adding to the natural warming. So perhaps you've been reading in the scientific literature, there was a great article in Science the other day about intensification of solar radiation. Apparently we're going through flares and hotter time. And we're adding this enormous pollution to the atmosphere, which of course has now so enhanced the greenhouse effect that we don't know what life in store. Let me just suggest this. The atmosphere has been polluted, has been filled with carbon dioxide in the past to a far greater degree than is the case today, and has come back and cleansed itself after continental drift, thousands of volcanoes. After the impact in 72,500 years ago when humanity was nearly wiped out by a volcano in Indonesia called Toba. Take a look at Toba on your computer sometime. You will learn some amazing things. It probably cost us incredible human diversity, gene diversity, and almost wiped us out. The atmosphere apparently was completely covered in soot for 17 years, but repaired itself. After the asteroid impact in Yucatan, surely there was no chance that the atmosphere would recover, and it did.
You hear all of this? Do you hear the brilliance of the simplicity tied together here? This is like the verbal brushstrokes of a master. And I've always known, ever since I was a young science student, that the full professor who knew what he was talking about always explained things in ways that I could understand it and the other children could understand it who wanted to learn. And that the assistant professor would cover the blackboard with data and drawings and diagrams, and he would say things and tell you to study and memorize, and you were going to get a test, and you didn't understand anything. And that is because the assistant professor was an ignoramus who didn't understand the topic himself. That only the full professor truly understood, the good ones, what he was talking about, and usually could explain it in simple terms. Which, of course, this is how I learned to be a great communicator. Were from the great professors that I had, and I had some really good ones. I had great high school teachers in my day at Jamaica High School in Queens. In those days, I had really some great teachers. And so, therefore, talk radio in some ways, although it's a medium of entertainment, it's also potentially a medium of great learning, whether you know it or not. And this edutainment that we have here is a golden, golden opportunity to please stop being superstitious about what's going on here. Please stop supporting the absurdity that we're so important that we're killing ourselves by driving our cars. This is rubbish, pure rubbish. Hysteria ties right into the psychopathology of the liberal mindset, which is, of course, obsessed with its own power and importance.
Savage.
Run, run, Rudolph. Randolph ain't
It is the Savage Nation, and speaking of conspiracy theories, Congressman Culberson, who has come to my defense and has sent a letter to Hillary Clinton on my behalf, has not heard from her yet. I doubt that he will. I would thought that for Machiavellian reasons, Hillary would rise above her partisanship and do her job as Secretary of State and say, yes, I will intervene on the behalf of Michael Savage, though I find what he says to be reprehensible or wrong if he actually said it. You have no right to ban him from your country because freedom of speech is protected by our Constitution. Freedom of travel is protected by a Bill of Rights. And we resent it, and the British government should act, therefore. But thus far, Hillary Clinton has not risen above her partisanship. And I think that this will not help her when she tries to gain the independent vote in the primaries against Obama. Because there's no question in my mind that Democrats, if they want to survive at all, are going to have to run someone other than Obama in next time around. Because the man's popularity, if it continues to slip at the same rate that the alarmists are saying temperatures are rising, they'll have a real catastrophe on their hands. Because this man is slipping and sliding, my friends. And we can even discuss that. I mean, why do you think Obama's popularity is dropping faster than global temperatures? Why is it happening that even the people in the middle who went for him, we don't expect the leftists to change their opinion of him. They knew who he was from the beginning. We don't expect the fraud artists at Media Matters or Daily Kos or any of the other extremist organizations who are out of touch with mainstream America, in fact, hate mainstream America, despise flyover country, spit on the flag, spit on the police, spit on the military, spit on mother and father, spit on apple pie and spit on the church. We don't expect them to come around to any sign of reality on whether it be Obama's realities or the realities of climate science. We don't expect that. But it was the middle that elected Obama. It was the great middle that elected Obama. In fact, many of you conservatives who were so fed up with George Bush and the war in Iraq, the endless war, you voted for change because you thought that this guy would actually represent change. But you found out that he's not only just another politician, but actually a very bad other politician, representing some of the worst interests in the world rather than some of the best interests in the world. Now, I'm going to tell you something else. I'm going through my archives right now, finding my writings from when I was very young in my 20s for a new book that, it's actually part of my biography that's being written about me. So I had to go into archives. Something I wrote when I was 18 I found called Who Was at the Helm? I was a young kid in college. And in this piece that I wrote, Who Was at the Helm?, I compare an intelligent organism like a hydra. It's a one-half-inch jellyfish-like organism. And I was stunned as a young kid studying biology to find out that even a little jellyfish-like creature, 1.5 inches, 1 inch, 1.5 inch in size, had an organizational structure that was beyond comprehension brilliant. And it seemed to be more intelligent than mankind's organizations on Earth. So I wrote an article entitled, Who Is at the Helm?, meaning, can't we get some brain cells running the world? So even then I was trying to figure out what would be best for humankind. Now we come to Barack Obama. The elites, so-called, that is the left-wing drug-taking fraud artists, had you believe through massive advertising campaigns and very, very controlled press conferences that Obama was not only the smartest man on earth, but perhaps the most anointed man since Jesus himself. So many of you went for the Elmagantry. You actually came into the tent and you started to say, yes, praise the Lord, the Messiah has risen. So the Elmagantries of the left in the spin machine put up the tents, and you went in and you started to worship the Elmagantry called Barack Hussein Obama. You didn't listen to anything anyone said. Your mind was made up. He was the Messiah. Now, 9 months into what you're saying, wait a minute, not only is he not the Messiah, the guy looks like he's stumbling all over himself. Never mind the mistakes he's made with regard to bowing down to dictators all over the world. Let's put that aside. Let's put the style aside. Let us look at the man's substance. Lied about job creation, doesn't exist. Lied about balancing the budget. He took a $1 trillion deficit created by the gangsters called Republicans, and he's now run it up into a $3 trillion deficit by the gangsters called Democrats. So you're saying, wait a minute, that can't be right. If I had a deficit in my family of $100,000, And I went to the bank and I said, wait a minute, don't take my house. Give me $300,000 and I'll straighten it out next year. The bank would laugh you out and they would take your house. But you have a man named Obama who says, I've got $1 trillion debt. I've got an answer for you. I'll raise it to $3 trillion by printing money and borrowing money from China and from Saudi Arabia and elsewhere. Now, you know that that doesn't make sense from your own point of view. You don't write down debt by increasing debt. So the average person is not so average when it comes to dollars and cents. They know there's been no job creation. It's a lie of Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi, and Obama. They know that there's been no deficit reduction. It's been driven through the ceiling. So on bread and butter issues alone, the man's popularity has started to crumble. And once people have seen that, they've said, he's just like every one of the other politicians, only a little slicker. Why should I believe another word he says? Now to add insult to injury, he goes to Japan and China. He gets nothing in return in terms of our strategic or national interests. In fact, he comes back having stabbed Tibet in the back, and Hollywood is silent. He gets nothing from China with regard to reevaluating the value of their currency, which is arbitrarily kept low in order to make sure that their economy is healthy and ours suffer. Nothing in that regard. No military cooperation whatsoever. Instead, he opens up more of our military to the Chinese PLA, the military. And so they start to say, well, who is this guy? Who does he represent? Who is he working for? It can't be the American people. So the big middle that went over and left the Republicans, rightly so, left the Republicans because they saw through them. They saw an endless war, and they didn't like it. The big middle has now moved away from Obama. And they're praying for anybody but Obama. And so, therefore, Sarah Palin's book tour pops up, and she does great because, okay, she is what she is. I'm not a big Sarah Palin fan, I'll be honest with you, in the sense that, yeah, she says the right things and probably does the right things, but I certainly wouldn't have the confidence to make her a president. I'll be very honest with you. At this time, I wouldn't. I said so when she first came on the scene. I said it, and I'll stick by it. I'd certainly prefer her over Obama, but she can't be the best choice that the Republicans can come up with. It's impossible to believe that. But if they do that, it's suicide. It's suicide all over again. If they do this again, you'll know that it's a party that's as extinct as the mammoth, not the elephant. You may as well change the party symbol from the elephant to the mammoth if they do this again. And they're just liable to do it because I believe they're so out of touch with reality. They rejected the conservatives. They rejected Michael Savage. They rejected anyone who was a true conservative as an extremist that they didn't need. And consequently, they lost everything. Because we actually are the base of the American people. I actually represent the core of the American people. I represent the American people. Not the Republican Party. They don't represent the American people. They never have and they never will. And when they say that we don't need the conservative base, well, what they said is we don't need anybody to, we don't need you because we can win without you. And they were wrong. Their advisors were wrong. They kept some good candidates away from the show. All of those candidates are history. Every last one of the candidates that I predicted would get nowhere have gotten nowhere. Giuliani, I said, wouldn't play west of the Hudson. Was I wrong? Well, I knew Giuliani wouldn't play west of the Hudson. And I knew why. And I told you that then. I told you Gingrich is a failed hack who shouldn't be believed any more than Al Gore should be believed. He's just an Al Gore on the right instead of an Al Gore on the left. And I was right about that. If they run this guy, I'm telling you they'll get 10% of the vote. So there's got to be somebody better. And I could start prognosticating as to who is better, and I'm not going to do that prior to Thanksgiving. I'd rather talk about turkey than the turkeys that they're liable to run. And so if you want to talk about turkey recipes, because I am going to do my turkey on Thursday, I've got my own recipe, my own formula. It works every year, comes out fine. You always regret it at the end because all it is a turkey, which you could eat every day of the week. I'd be better off going to my favorite Chinese restaurant than I would cooking a turkey. But I'm going to do the turkey. It's something that we always do. It's a traditional thing. And I enjoy the smells in the house, you know, and I remember Mama, to be honest with you. I wish she were with us, but she isn't. And I still wish to God she was here sitting here at 100, but she isn't. She's in God's little acre somewhere up there, I hope, cooking for him. I hope he likes her cooking. And so, therefore, when I cook, it ties me back to my parents and my parents' parents and their parents' parents. In other words, cooking at home reminds you that there is a thing much more important than politics and politicians, and that is the eternal. These are the eternal things. And that's family. Now, why is family so important? Because family is the brick of a society. Mother plus father plus children is the brick of a society. When you start to destroy the bricks, or you atomize the bricks, what you do is you destroy the society, which is why the communists have long wanted to destroy mother and father equals family, which is why they invented the concept of other families. There's no such thing as another family. It's mother plus father. Yes, there are single mothers and single fathers. I understand that. You start jumbling that around, there's a reason for it. And you have to read the original Karl Marx to know what the reason is. Karl Marx, the father of Bolshevism, the father of communism, if you will, Karl Marx said that the concept of family is the concept of ownership. It's the bourgeois concept of ownership, and it must be destroyed. And only by destroying the family can we wreck bourgeois society and create the new society and the new man. Now you understand why in the 1920s the communists put out a lot of hairy women in New York City and told them to go out and get the blue-collar men through free love. There were many free love women in 1920s New York. They went to the longshoremen and the plumbers' unions, and they went to the halls where the men met, and they promoted free love because they knew that if they gave out free love, the man was less likely to find the woman, get married, and have children, and they would therefore help bring about the Bolshevik or communist revolution. Now let's spin the clock forward. Here we are, 2009. The birth rate is in the toilet in the United States of America, except amongst illegal immigrants and certain immigrant groups, by and large those who come here not to work, but to work the system. And we have a society in decline as a result of this entire construct. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas.
I told you, here we go again. At least he says Christmas, not Xmas. All right, that's enough. Final nail in coffin of man-made global warming. But you know Al Gore won't answer the charges because he's not a scientist. He's a promoter. It's like P.T. Barnum. This is Elmer Gantry. His minions, Elmer Gantry's with science degrees. That's all. Obama plans to send 34,000 more troops to Afghanistan. And who's going to pay for it? You. You, all Americans, will have a tax raise for this. I thought, frankly, we should get out of Afghanistan. I still do. I don't have any idea why we're there. I still don't know why we're there. I don't understand it. I try to understand it. And unless I have an idea why we're there, I can't sit here and say we should be there. I mean, it's the same thing with Iraq. You could argue Iraq was necessary. I could argue it wasn't. I could say the real winner here is Iran. I could also say Bush lied when he said that this war will not cost us anything, it will pay for itself, because we were promised there would be reparations from the Iraqis in the form of oil. We never saw that. We never got it, because the Seven Sister Oil Companies do not want the oil prices further depressed. I mean, it's unbelievable to me, you know, that they're doing the same thing under Obama, and you don't see the same, this sort of smooth transition from Afghanistan to, from Iraq to Afghanistan, with the same military-industrial complex and the same exact rules of engagement, which are killing our men, causing our men to go before tribunals of lawyers with uniforms. Instead of wiping the floor up with the enemy and getting it over with, our men are forced to fight on the basis that they're policemen, not military men. And no one can do that. Nobody can do that. Nobody on earth should be forced to do that. And that's why I say this 34,000 troops is a disaster for your children, because they're going to pay the cost as well. Where the money is going to come from is unbelievable to me. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com is the phone number. I must tell you that we need a caller here named Brent from Tucson, Arizona. Brent, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes. What are Teddy's plans for Thanksgiving?
Teddy, my 11-pound poodle. Well, his major plan is to avoid being put in the oven. So that's the first thing. His next major plan is to not be walked through Chinatown on Thanksgiving. I don't think he likes hearing the butcher slamming the cleaver down upon the wood. And when he looks up and sees chickens and other animals hanging from hooks, I think he gets a little, let us say, a little nervous. So Teddy's plans are twofold. One, not to wind up in the oven, and two, to make sure he eats what comes out of the oven. Other than that, I don't think there are any specific plans. Brent, let me ask you something. Do you have a dog at home?
I don't.
Do you like Teddy? Do you enjoy the fact that I tell Teddy stories?
I love Teddy. I think he's the best portion of your program.
Thank you. After years of talking about other things, what would you really like to hear about my dog, Teddy?
The story that you told about the other dogs, the one dog that didn't have all of its legs, but they played nicely because...
Oh, Freddy down the street. Freddy has three legs and walks around with the same impish behavior as any other dog, doesn't know he only has three legs, and they circle each other, they sniff each other, they do the thing that male dogs do anyway with the three... Actually, wait a minute. He's a male dog. He can't do what other dogs do now. Oh, yes, he can. He has one good leg. So he can still do what other male dogs do, even with one real leg. That's right, that works. And they get along, you know. They don't fight. They're not like human beings. They get along. I'm always amazed by that. It's a beautiful thing to watch animals. Most of them do get along, unless they're raised by crazy people. They generally get along with everybody. I blame the person, not the dog, if the dogs are vicious. It's usually the family, not the dog. You know that?
Yes.
They can be trained to do anything. I'm going to tell you a dog story, a fast dog story. You know that great documentary I talked about, War Dogs of the Pacific? Loved it. Incredible. Unbelievable. Where do you think the military got the dogs? Were they Weimaraners, whatever they call them? Or what were they called, those kind of dogs with the long black snouts that they used in the Pacific to hunt the enemy? Does anyone know what kind of dog that was? Anyhow, they got most of them from families where they had been domesticated to not bite, not kill, not hurt. And they took the dogs and trained them to kill and hunt down Japanese, mainly in tunnels. And the Japanese soldiers were very, very afraid of the dogs. They feared the dogs more than the flamethrowers. The point of the story is that after the war in the Pacific was over, the Army told the men to kill the dogs, to euthanize them, or the Marines were told to kill them. The Marines said, "We're never going to do that. They're our best friends. You'll have to kill us first." They had a fight with the brass to not euthanize these dogs. It would save their lives, and they lived through hell with them. And as a result, the Marines retrained the dogs who had been taken from domestic homes, taught them to kill, and with the exception, I believe, of four animals, all of them were able to be retrained to be good household pets. They were no longer atavistic, which is an amazing story as to the effects of human beings upon animals, where you can train a dog to be kind and gentle and loving and a good pet, or to be a killer. By and large, that's true. It's not 100% true. There are genetic predispositions in most animals, including human beings, that can't be overridden by the best of liberal intentions. There are people who are just born bad. There are people who are just born evil. And there's nothing you can do with them. No amount of education or training can ever change them. Most of them wind up in politics or the law, and almost every one of them have a D next to their name. 1-800-449-8255. Sacramento, California. Eric, you're next up. Oh, my goodness, we're out of time in this hour. But there's another big hour here coming on the Savage Nation. Be sure to visit michaelsavage.com, where you can find, well, I think you can still get a copy of Band in Britain for the holidays. I know Friday is going to be gone, the first edition, and I'll have to reprint. It'll be weeks before we get the second, but there are still copies of the first edition, first printing for your husband or others who believe in America. Banned in Britain on michaelsavage.com. Another big hour coming up. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The libs are pushing health, whether you want it or not. The gangsters are pushing it. Listen to this clip of Bela Lugosi talking about sending people to jail for not having health insurance.
Do you think it's fair to send people to jail for not buying health insurance?
Well, the point is that we want to make sure that everyone has access to health care. For a long time now, people who haven't had have health care or provided it have placed the burden on others. We all have to do our part, and that is the point of the bill.
But, Madam Speaker, I'm just trying to understand. If you don't buy health insurance, you go to jail?
Well,
you answered my question.
I think the legislation is very fair in this respect.
Can you believe this, that your government is talking about it? Joining us now, the reporter is Robert Scott Bell.
Can you believe that Pelosi wanting to criminalize those of you out there that feel like they'd rather have other ways to go in the care of their health and healing?
This is unbelievable to me.
My goodness, besides the government sanctioned and mandated from above ways of pharmaceuticalizing every aspect of your life. You know, I've said over the years that the health of a nation depends on the health of its people, but mandating participation in a bankrupt system of disease management portends to be the cause of the flatlining of what is left of the organic American Republic. This last Saturday night, my goodness, Saturday night dead it was. They went in, the Senate went in to see, well, because we vote to debate on this mandated health insurance reform scam. And, of course, they're voting to debate. Why is there a debate? There shouldn't be a debate. There should be a debate about why those Democrats are even in office.
Exactly.
How do 60 people vote against something that is not only blatantly unconstitutional, but violating every aspect of individual liberty or whatever's left of it in our country to force all Americans into a system of government-run and sanctioned disease management? Those who still love liberty under Pelosi will be branded as criminals should this health care reform go from debate into a monstrosity that is actually passed. And it's strange that what the terrorists could not do, the Democrats in Congress may. And then who will pay for this? Who is going to pay for this constitutional incompetence by Pelosi and others? And of course, our kids, our grandkids, will pay the price, because there will not be an America that has at its core liberty. Instead, medical mandates, pharmaceutical mandates, government mandates, and jail time should you just refuse to participate in a system that goes against your belief system of health and healing. And we've seen this disaster in government as well, and we've seen the collectivist in government, which is not exclusively, quite honestly, a Democratic trait, although it seems to be a mandate to get into the Democratic Party these days, because we've covered for so long now the pronouncements coming from CDC about the H1N1. Everybody's got it. Everybody's dead, but everybody still needs a shot. And yet, as we highlight, like we have here on the Savage Nation, those individuals who have been harmed, damaged, maybe permanently, by this rush to shoot everything that moves with experiments that have not been properly tested for safety. You cannot, anybody with a degree cannot suddenly say in 2 to 3 weeks of testing of H1N1 shot, it's declared safe. You cannot do that. It's not possible to do that. And we're finding out in truth, it is not safe. And then they would argue that, well, all the people we are saving, it's worth it. But it's not worth it if your little Johnny or your little Susie gets Guillain-Barré or is killed by this program of mandating, again, another government mandate to shoot everybody up with this. And, of course, they're going after the medical professionals, who I defend equally in their right to refuse medical experimentation thrown down by the federal government.
I'm sick of this.
And so in this vote for continued debate of a health care debacle or a health care reform debacle that shouldn't be debated, it should be just chunked out immediately, we have a cost that's even higher than perhaps what the cost will be ultimately, because the cost is freedom. We got Senator Mary Landrieu, the Louisiana purchase. We thought it was $100 million. She goes up and says, no, it wasn't $100 million, it's $300 million. And she's actually proud of it. She's proud of the thieving. She's proud of the theft. I mean, we not only have lost our way, now we're actually taking pride in how much money we can steal.
How could this be going on?
And that 60-39 vote clearing the way for what they call a bruising full-scale debate after Thanksgiving. 2,074 pages. 2,007 and $1 trillion Federal Reserve note dollars. And that should be enough to disqualify anybody from the Senate right there voting for this thing. I mean, because you're constitutionally incompetent at that point. I would argue there's a level of insanity that is already going on here. And then now, coincidentally, the mammogram debate, because there was an interesting release now from one of the government groups here that talks about, this is the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, a government panel of doctors and scientists. They concluded that such early and frequent screenings, we're talking about mammography, often lead to false alarms and unneeded biopsies without substantially improving women's odds of survival. Now, those critics of this so-called Pelosi plan and everybody that's for this government mandate are actually warning that this is what is likely to come, that there will be rationing. Rationing of mammograms, rationing of pap smears. But in the case, and I would agree, inevitably this will happen. There will be de facto death panels should this pass. But the reality is, this is one of the rare times I'm actually in agreement with the Preventive Services Task Force here.
What? Why?
Because they have concluded quite properly that ionizing radiation, they may not say it in the way I'm about to say it, but that ionizing radiation is not good for breast tissue. In fact, that utilizing these mammograms can create the very problem of breast cancer that they claim to want to detect. Then, as they acknowledge, leading to unneeded biopsies, of which have been acknowledged, these biopsies creating the spread of cancer cells that may have been contained in a benign form or a tumor, now spreading and metastasizing through lymphatic tissue because of, again, another invasive medical procedure that was unneeded and quite dangerous in what it caused. But the critics are now saying the new rules are ignoring the health risk, that it's just not worth not doing it, right? They say, okay, breast cancer, big cause of death, leading cause of cancer deaths among women. And here is where I have to bring up something that is rarely covered in the mainstream media when they argue for these invasive procedures. And it's something I call medical collectivism, which is just as evil as any other form of collectivism. And here is a quote coming from Dr. Sainara Comer, a professor of surgery at Mount Sinai Surgical Oncology Department in New York. And she says this: for every 7 to 10 women that are being overdiagnosed or overtreated, we're saving one woman's life. And I think for me, that's worth it. And I'm thinking, what about the 7 to 10 women you just mentioned, doctor, who are being overdiagnosed and overtreated, perhaps injured by the treatments for something they didn't need treatment for? And we've saved one. Well, great for the one, but what about those seven? In other words, this is collectivism. It's about sacrificing a group for somebody, some one individual. And that individual, just like as I talked about, the 14-year-old kid happened to be, if it's yours, struck down with Guillain-Barré because of the H1N1 shot or the seasonal flu shot, whatever it is. And we say, well, that's just the price we have to pay for keeping everybody away from the flu. And if it's your child, or if it's your mom or your sister or your grandmother that's been improperly diagnosed with breast cancer and invasive procedures engaged, the removing breast tissue unneeded, then you're going to say, that's worth it. It's not worth it to that one woman.
I see what you mean.
And so we've collectively lost our minds, not just starting with Pelosi, but Pelosi has gone so far off the deep end now, wanting to imprison Americans simply for not wanting to take part in what she believes as an elitist within the Washington global conspiracy to take away freedom from all Americans. She simply believes that you should be imprisoned for basically believing in a different way to go than those in government.
There is, I think the legislation is very fair in this respect.
So as we're looking to enjoy a holiday season here, and the Democrats want to come in and debate further on criminalizing the rest of America that hasn't already been criminalized because they don't do what the government tells them to do. Just think of this when you're eating your turkey this week, and hopefully we can let them know that we will not accept this form of criminality or criminal behavior, not coming from Americans, but coming from senators and representatives in the guise of Nancy Pelosi.
Thanks for the report, Robert.
Thanks, Michael. I'll be covering this right through the holiday season at my blog at robertscottbell.blogspot.com, and we'll load up on some podcasts as well to keep everybody informed.
This is Dr. Dissident Michael Savage back in a moment.
Savage. We'll be right back.
With all the talk about the upcoming Copenhagen so-called global warming conference, we need to look at the economic costs and who will actually pay for this fraud. Joining us now with a look at this is Ben Lieberman from the Heritage Foundation.
Well, thanks, Michael. Well, as you know, the big global warming international UN conference is scheduled for December 7th to 18th in Copenhagen. And as the U.S. and other delegates head into that convention, we need to be very careful not to enact any kind of provisions that would do far more economic harm, both for the U.S. and for the rest of the world, far more economic harm than environmental good. Now, as you probably know, for 8 years, President Bush was blamed for the lack of more progress on global warming and especially international global warming treaty talks. But as we're learning now, the real problem wasn't Bush. It was the underlying realities that made this a bad deal for the U.S. and a bad deal for other nations as well. The economic reality is that reducing these emissions in order to address global warming is prohibitively expensive. That's why the U.S. was correct to stay out of the 1997 Kyoto Protocol Treaty, and that's why nations like Europe haven't been able to meet their obligations under the treaty. It's also why developing nations, including fast-developing nations like China and India, wisely refused to agree to any emissions reductions under the treaty. Those economic realities persist. The reality is reducing these emissions is prohibitively costly. And of course, economic realities lead to political realities. The developing world simply refuses to agree to binding emissions targets, binding restrictions on energy use. China now out-emits the U.S., and their emissions are increasing about 9 times faster than us. And that's very true for a number of fast-developing, developing nations, I should say. And that's true for a number of developing nations. So simply put, an agreement that leaves the developing world off the hook will make little difference, because even if the U.S. and other developed nations reduce their emissions, that decline would be swamped by the rapid growth in emissions from the developing world. And there's a rift that without China's involvement, the treaty would be meaningless, but China and other developing nations have said they don't want to be involved in this treaty. And also there's a rift between the U.S. and Europe. Europe wants the U.S. involved in this treaty, I think largely in order to knock the American economy down a peg. And so a lot of the provisions in past treaties were skewed against the United States. And of course, underlying all of this is the scientific reality that global warming is looking less and less like a crisis than many had thought it to be heading into the 1997 Kyoto Protocol discussions. It's rather ironic that we're heading into Copenhagen for the biggest global warming conference since 1997. And temperatures around the world have been relatively flat since 1997. Hard to argue for an expensive new global warming treaty when we haven't seen global warming as of late. So whatever the solution to global warming is, whether it's an international treaty at Copenhagen or at some subsequent meeting, or whether it's domestic legislation, which is working its way through the Senate right now in the U.S., a solution is only a solution to the extent that there's a problem in the first place. And we're starting to see that global warming is less and less of a problem. A solution is a solution only to the extent it solves the problem. And these treaties, these international agreements have been shown to be ineffective in making any difference. So what we're left with is a real risk. If the U.S. were to agree to anything at Copenhagen, is a measure that would be all economic and probably disproportionate pain for the U.S. for very little, if any, environmental gain. So maybe the best thing for U.S. delegates at Copenhagen to do is to not go.
Well, there's a lot of talk about how participation in this so-called summit could destroy our sovereignty.
Everything that's wrong with domestic legislation, global warming legislation, is also wrong with international treaties and then some. And what I mean by that is that our sovereignty would be at risk. I'm worried enough what EPA bureaucrats here in the U.S. would do with a new global warming piece of legislation to enact. But if it's UN bureaucrats, I'm even more worried. And by the same token, I'm worried what U.S. courts would do to interpret domestic global warming legislation in ways that could make it even more expensive. But if it's not U.S. courts, if it's some sort of international or UN tribunal, I'm even more worried. So we'd be giving up a lot of our control over the economy if some international body was enforcing some global warming treaty that we're obligated to.
If you haven't heard it yet, you must listen to our so-called military leadership discussing the terrorist shootings at Fort Hood. Defense Secretary Robert Gates refuses to call it terrorism, even though the Islamic murderer screamed Allah Akbar.
Based on the facts that you have now about Hassan and what happened that day, is it fair to characterize the shooting as a terrorist attack?
I'm just not going to go there. As the senior person in the departmental chain of command, I am the least able to render opinions on these kinds of issues.
And Admiral Mullins says the military is strong because of its diversity.
My message to all those in uniform, and including Muslims in uniform, is how much we appreciate their service, the difference that they make. I have for my entire career, the diversity of our force is one of its greatest strengths, and that not unlike what the Secretary said, that no one should draw any rapid conclusions.
A military is only strong if it fights. You won't let them. But wait, it gets worse.
If you had a young sailor in your command making statements of a radical nature, what would be the appropriate course of action?
Without trying to map it to the current incident, my expectation is for command, for any commander to certainly to be aware of those kinds of things, and then to take appropriate action, to certainly not sit idly by, but to address it. And there are a lot of different ways to address it, and a single proclamation, if you will, doesn't in and of itself necessarily mean anything. You got to put it into the circumstances.
Did you hear this? So according to Admiral Mullen, a soldier could openly declare a holy war against his fellow soldiers, but they wouldn't do anything about it if he only said it once. And here was the next topic from these two leaders of the military.
I would like to ask you about your meeting on Tuesday with the Saudi Prince bin Sultan. Could you give us an update about that meeting? Did the prince deliver any request, any message? And what are your views about the conflict, the current conflict in Yemen?
Well, we have a very close military relationship with the Saudis, and an ongoing arms sales program with them. We did discuss the situation in Yemen, and Assistant Secretary, basically outlined for me the Saudi view of the situation there. I'll just leave it at that. Yeah.
My God, how much lower can we go? Well, we're in trouble. Nobody at the top will take responsibility for the massacre at Fort Hood. Not only do they not take responsibility, they won't even say who did it. Well, you don't have to jump to conclusions to understand when a man writes, "I can't wait to join you in an afterlife," and then a few weeks later or whatever, he screams Allah Akbar and opens fire on innocent people standing in line without guns. What conclusions can you come to, Mr. Mullen or Secretary Gates? No conclusions? Then what in the hell are you good for? I'm sorry. I have respect for these men. Very powerful men. They've risen to the top of the military chain of command. tell us, how are you going to stop the next massacre? And they say, we have no way to stop it because we can't even conclude who did it or what happened. And you shouldn't jump to conclusions, or we'll arrest you, basically. They'll arrest you for jumping to a conclusion. I don't blame the media. The media tried to get an answer out of him. You could see the reporter asks Gates if he can call it a terrorist attack, and Gates says he's not just going to go there. You hear this? Well, anyway, here's another one. Hassan was worried about results of recent HIV test. What? Where'd this come from? Major Nidal Hassan seemed worried about the results of an HIV blood test taken a week before the Fort Hood shooting rampage, according to federal investigators piecing together background details. The information came from a member of the Fort Hood medical staff who was in the building where Hassan is accused of opening fire and killing 13 people and wounding over 30. The investigators said there was no indication that Hassan was HIV positive, although a bottle of medicine used to treat a HIV positive individual's Combivar was seen in Hassan's apartment by ABC News last week. Medical experts say many doctors also have this drug on hand in case of an accidental needle stick. A second drug seen in the apartment is an antibiotic designed to treat respiratory infections. However, it can also be used to treat specific opportunistic infections in patients with HIV. Hassan, who was not married, was a regular at a Killeen, Texas strip club, which features nude dancers, according to employees there. So I guess the holy man crossed over the wall. I guess the holy man wasn't so holy, and I guess to him, the holiest thing he could do is assassinate innocent people. I guess that's a holy thing to do, according to him. I guess he thinks he's going to be rewarded for that in the next world. Don't you see what's going on? Well, okay, of course you see. Let's talk about other things. Austin, Texas. Christine, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi. I'm requesting a story that I've only heard you tell once quite a long time ago. It was very poignant, thought-provoking, and heartbreaking. And it was concerning when your dad and his fellow merchants would buy trunks, you would go through them and, I guess, you know, sell the contents.
Yes.
And you opened this certain trunk that had a nun's habit in it, I think, and some other
yes.
things. And
yes.
And it was just, I just told the story to two different people recently. And they,
I'll tell a story in a minute or less right now. You know, I'm looking now. I don't think it's in psychological nudity. I told it and didn't put it in. Okay, I'll tell the story in about a minute or less. It's an interesting story, but it's heartbreaking. You're right. Tragic and also poignant. Dad owned a small antique secondhand store, and in the early days, some of his merchandise was bought at Subway Auction. A Subway Auction in those days, the men would go and they would buy trunks and suitcases that were left on the subway. The city would sell them. And these were unopened objects at the time. They had been sealed when they were found. No one knew what was in them. And basically, these poor guys, the merchants, would buy them on the face value alone. So if it was a leather suitcase, they offer $5 or $6, and hope to God there was something of value that would make them $25 when they would sell it in their store, you know, and you add it up. So they bought a bunch of trunks. Then at night, we would come back into the – I was a young kid. This was very exciting. They'd with the truck and the Excelsior and bring it all back into the store at night. I used to love that. It'd be cold outside. Try to imagine it. The snow is blowing. You open the door. I still dream of these days. You go in there. You close the door. You go, like blowing in the hand. You know. And they start opening the trunks. And then, you know, one guy. And there's different stalls. And so the guy says, hey, look what I found here. Look at this. I found this. I found that. That's a nice piece. John, that's good. So then one of them opens up a trunk. And he says, hey, look at this. It was owned by a nun. I said, how do you know? Well, look, it's her habit. And then they dig a little deeper. And they find pictures. Black and white pictures. Oh, here she is before she went in the nunnery, and they look at the pictures, and there she is when she goes in a nunnery. Wow, you know, it's kind of, then you get it, then they slow down a little because they know it's kind of like a little different than the average suitcase. And then they go to the bottom of it, and they find something, they don't know what it is. They looked at everything, there was nothing really of value in there. On the bottom, there's something wrapped up, and they unravel it, and they jump back in horror. Inside was an embryo. I'll be right back.
Savage.
An article, Simple Secret of a Healthy Heart. It says gentle exercise can dramatically cut the danger of an early death from heart disease. Just 30 minutes of jogging or cycling three times a week has amazing results for people with heart problems. The UK's biggest killer. In 3 months, it slashed the risk of an early death by 60%. I've always known this. Since I was like 30 when I gave up running. It says gentle exercise. 30 minutes of jogging or cycling three times a week. I cycle about every day. If I miss it, I don't feel good. But it's gentle. You don't push the cardiovascular system. Never. Think Tai Chi, not Kung Fu. I've said this to you before. Moderation. Moderation. You don't have to overdo it. Light workout with barbells. Light. That means light. Don't stress yourself. When you feel that stress, back off. Something will break. At a certain point, your body is not going to take it. You're not a child anymore. Every time I see these run, these idiot, what do they call them? With a 10 million schmucks running there. What do they call them there? And the guys from Uganda always win. What do they call them? Marathon. More and more guys are dying at these things. Unbelievable. 30 minutes of jogging or cycling three times a week is amazing results. You could have been 3 months of slash the risk of early number 60%. All right, so we've known that. You want to cut down on heart. How about taking some vitamins? Would that work too? Like B6? Never heard about that. Niacin? Never heard about that. Never heard about the shoot study with vitamin E, 800 units a day? Never heard that. Your old doc never told you that? I was reading this book. Again, I shouldn't even tell you because, you know, when you hear book, it almost sounds dirty. Sounds like an ant. How dare you read a book? You read books? You're not like President Bush? How dare you read a book? That's so, man. That is so unconservative. You're supposed to not read books. You're supposed to get your information from the Republican National Committee. I was reading this book, and he says, well, the guy writes like an angry blacksmith. He can draw characters so vividly that they breathe. That's me. I speak like an angry blacksmith, and I draw characters so vividly that you can almost feel them. They breathe. They breathe. So when I tell you that Obama's surrounded by Lower East Side communists who belong in a soapbox in Bryant Park rather than in the White House, I'm telling you like it is, Johnson. That's the way it is. Now I'm going to ask you something. Did they teach children what virtues are for a man or a person? What it was to be a virtuous man? What are the five virtues that a child should learn? Well, you got to go back to Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, and a book about written, you know, 1,000 years ago. And what are the five virtues? His five senses were free of sin. His five fingers never failed him. And all his earthly hope was in Christ's five wounds on the cross, as our creed tells us. And he goes on to the five virtues. And it says, freedom from sin are for other men important. And it says, and pity is the greatest of knightly virtues. You hear this? Pity. Pity is the greatest of knightly virtues. Pity is the greatest of knightly virtues. Think of how beautiful that is. In other words, compassion. What they called pity then in Old English, ancient England, would today, I think, be compassion. And pity, the greatest of knightly virtues. And these noble five were the firmest of all in his soul. And all these fives met in one man, joined to each other, each without end, set in five perfect points. This is beautiful, the holy pentangle. But listen to what I'm getting at, is that courtesy is an important virtue, but pity, the greatest of knightly virtues. Now, turn on your television. They show a strong man, allegedly. And what does he do? He shoots somebody, beats somebody up, tortures somebody, has, you know, prostitutes at his fingertip. Do they ever show pity or compassion as a virtue of a strong man? Never. Why? Who's writing the movies? The same people who write Curb Your Enthusiasm. Is there any pity in that character? Is there any compassion in that low-life gutter rat as portrayed by that character? No. Everything is mean and nasty and from the gutter. So if you were to portray that character on a national stage, what you wind up with is the ethos of the wise guy modern urbanite today in America. In other words, he's supposed to represent a guy who's smart and knows everything. And that's why I say to him to urinate on a picture of Jesus and to call that entertainment is the opposite of virtue. It's the opposite of virtue in a man. Well, anyway, I don't want to preach it to him. I did already. I got to tell you this as a side note. I went home, got on my bicycle. I found it, everyone knows this, the greatest way to fight fatigue is to do a little light exercise. Not heavy, light. light, moderate. Light, moderate. Think Tai Chi. Don't think Kung Fu. So if you're very exhausted, you know, be careful you don't bust an artery with extreme sports. Get on a bicycle. I go for a ride. I go through a neighborhood park. And I saw they built a new play area for teenagers called the skateboard park. And it was amazing. I saw kids on little small bicycles, like they were 13, 14-year-old boys, going up and down and doing things I could never imagine were possible with such dexterity that I marveled at it. And I had the thought that these boys with this much dexterity are the next generation of naval aviators or Air Force pilots. In other words, think of what it takes, the spatial control to ride down a ramp at that speed, jump up another ramp and flip a bicycle around in the air and come back down. I said, you know, and some of these kids are like long-haired, like hippie kids from, you know, the Bay Area. I said, there's hope for America yet. That's all I could say. If these kids could be put into the military through forced service, and kids who could do this could become great pilots. You want to talk about what we should do in this country? We should have 2 years. We should have 2 years compulsory military service in this country, so we have a standing army that's ready to defend the nation. Because if you think that all wars are over, I got another guest coming for you. There should be 2 years of forced compliance with military service. Absolutely. I think that's a great topic for next week. What would be wrong with 2 years of service? Many of these kids are incapable of doing anything at all. They got a degree in sociology from Purdue. They can't even work in a chicken factory. They wouldn't know how to pluck a chicken. It's sad. I'm not ridiculing the kids. I'm ridiculing the professors and the colleges for leading them to believe that a degree in SOS would get them a job. What can you do with a degree in SOS? Nothing. You have to make up for your deficits by getting a real degree afterwards. So, you know, but you can see kids, even like the kids of potheaded, you know, parents in Marin County, California, they ride down, they ride up. You ever see them flip around? It's astounding what they can do. But I couldn't do that when I was a kid. There's no way I could have done that. I mean, kids do crazy, you know, things on a bicycle. I remember when we were young, 8, 9, 10, and kids would come racing at us with bicycles to try and hurt us. We had a very nice little trick. We put a wooden stick in the front wheel. It was like facing the cavalry where I grew up. If someone tried to run you down, they were nice kids. There were no drugs in those days, basically, to calm the kids down. So their natural testosterone clicked in. They beat each other up. They fought with each other. They try to run you over. Let's say they had a bicycle and you're walking there from a different street. They'd come racing at you with the bike. So you took a little stick with you and you put it in their front wheel and the kid took a nice sail through the air. And you continued on your walk. That's all. I spoke with a World War II veteran. I bicycle every day. I'm not going to give you a homie story, but this fellow's 85. And we run into each other on a bicycle every day. And we talk about World War II once in a while. He was a mechanic here in the San Francisco area before the war. So he went into the Army. He became a mechanic in the tank corps. Incidentally, he said, I hope he's not listening, actually. He said to me that he could have been excused because he had several operations prior to going into the military. So when he got to the doctors, they said, look, John, you could easily get out of the Army because of all the surgeries you've had and the implements you have in your body. He said, no, I want to go in. So he went in and he became a mechanic in the military, and he worked on, of course, Sherman tanks with General Patton. He was on the front lines as a tank repairman, in essence. He said after a night battle, they would go out on the field and either try to repair the Sherman tanks or they'd blow them up on the field because they couldn't bring them back. And we were talking one thing or the other, and I talked about the difference with him of the Sherman tank versus the Tiger tank, and everyone knows the German tanks were 10 times better. They had 88-millimeter guns on them. Our guys had shells that bounced. The Sherman shells bounced off German tanks. Every mission in an American tank was a suicide mission, virtually every mission. But they went out and fought anyway. They had to blow the wheels off the other tank. They had to then blow the turret so it couldn't rotate. Then they had to literally throw a grenade into the tank to stop it. And the men did it. Many of them died. You know what he said to me? He said if the Germans had enough fuel, he said they could have pushed us back into the sea. He said it was only because the Germans did not have enough fuel, he said, that we were able to push on to Berlin. Now, what does that have to do with today? It's the difference between a humble mechanic from World War II who's still riding his bicycle and the kind that we have in the military today, like Chief of Staff General George Casey. I have a staff assistant who works for me, Godric Rockland, who was in the Marines for 5 years, and he's a young man, and he says he's seen photos of American military members from the 50s and 60s guarding barracks with weapons under peaceful auspices. He says with the rise of various post-traumatic stress disorder and such, trust in the average soldier by their superiors to not shoot other soldiers has sort of diminished. He said, as a result, the military has fallen prey to public perceptions. And so here we are. We have soldiers who are sacrificial lambs to political correctness. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.